trying not to structure our life around, you know, it's been 3 months, it's been 6 months, but the hardest is, you know, holidays, birthdays, and family type stuff that she can't be at.
3, 4, 5, 6.
Hi guys, this is The Missing Ones, and I am Liberty Campbell.
And I'm Alexis Peterson.
How are you? Wait, what?
Good. I was going to say for a second, it almost sounded like you were going to say my name. Like, I was anticipating it, and then I was like, wait, say it. And then I was like, she's not supposed to.
That's not my name. It's probably because I, like, for some reason said, and I'm Liberty. I don't know. Anyways, but yeah. It's been a minute since we've, like, chatted. How are you? How was life?
Good. Kind of boring. Just work. And so, nothing exciting.
I can kind of relate. How was your Easter?
It was good. It was pretty low-key. We just kind of hung out around the house, and then I had to go to work. And so, we just kind of had a relaxing day.
Well, that sounds very nice and calm. We went to Duncan's grandparents' house, and his grandma set up this really cute... Oh, hi, Riley.
She decided to join us for our podcast today.
Aw, and she's giving you kisses. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Duncan's grandma set up a super cute Easter egg hunt for Scarlett, where she put the letters of her name in these eggs. And she had to open the eggs and find the letter. And then she had to find the letter throughout the house. And then wherever that letter was, there would be like a present. Oh, it was really cute.
My mother-in-law has this tradition of instead of having like Easter baskets right there, ready for, you know, to wake up and see. And she will hide them around the house. And so they would be in a different spot every year. And so the kids would find them, and then they would find like other people's, and then follow those people around and be like, I know where your Easter basket is.
I love that. That sounds like so much fun. Did your parents hide hard-boiled eggs that you had dyed?
No, we never did that. We never dyed eggs.
You never dyed eggs? So we would get eggs and we would dye like four dozen eggs. And then my parents would hide them before going to bed. And then the next day we would eat hard-boiled eggs that had sat out all night long.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, I don't ever remember getting sick. So, like, obviously it's not that big of a deal, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they're thoroughly cooked and maybe if it was cool enough at night, it's not that big of a deal, you know?
I don't think my parents even, like, gave it a second thought. Like, they just were like, here's these boiled eggs. Hope they don't go rotten. I don't know.
Yeah. We never had to do, like, hard-boiled eggs, but we would, like, with candy and hide them around. Which, for Riley, I do it now for her, where I will take plastic eggs and I will hide treats in them and scatter them throughout the yard. And then, so she's smart enough that she knows how to, like, grab it and break it open and then just eat the treats and then leave the eggs.
That's really clever. My dogs don't ever get any kind of special treatment like that. They are not neglected by any means. They have everything they need and are loved, but they just don't get as much time as they used to.
You had baby goats.
Yes, so you were right. I mean, I don't know what time they were born. I think that they were born probably really early Monday morning.
Yeah, could be.
But anyways, we went out and we were having breakfast on the porch. And I, like, look over and I checked on her just, like, curious. And I didn't really see anything, so I wasn't worried. And then I went back out a little while later and I saw the little butt of June, and it was like, OMG. And so I threw my boots on. I helped Scarlett get her boots on. And like we ran out there. I was in my pajamas. I didn't even have a bra on. And I cuddled the cutest baby goats in the world. I love them so much.
They are so cute.
They're so cute.
And if you guys haven't seen already, we posted pictures of her two baby goats on our Instagram. So you can go check them out there.
Yes, we named them Johnny, Cash, and June Carter. And I like had my reservations about it because Johnny and June were like husband and wife, and these guys are brother and sister, but I don't care. I don't care. Because we have Fancy and we have Jolene. So we wanted to like stick with the country music theme. So Johnny and June it is.
Nice names.
We went car shopping on Friday. I hate car shopping, in case you were wondering.
Me too.
But we did come home with a new car, so that was good. Our salesman, his name was Max. He was really funny. Super nice. Annoying, but super funny. Like, he made the whole experience so much easier and, like, so much more fun because he was a blast. We were driving the car... And he's African American, and he sticks his head out the back window and he goes, "Help, I'm black and they kidnapped me." And we were like, "Oh my gosh, what's wrong with you?" And then Duncan opened the sunroof of the car, and it's like one of those huge ones where it's the entire ceiling. And he stands up. He stands up and puts his head out the sunroof. And I was like, "What is the matter with you?" But he made the whole experience so much better. So if you are in Southern Utah and you're looking for a car, I am going to suggest Max at St. George Auto Gallery because he killed it. He did a really good job. Like, car buying sucks. And... it sucks even more when you get a salesman who like couldn't care less, but he was a lot of fun. Do you have anything else that you need to tell me from this week? We haven't talked in like a minute.
I know. This week is pretty busy. We're recording this Monday, so.
Yeah, this episode's not going to be up on Wednesday. I'm almost positive. I just really suck at life. We both have just like been sucking it up a little bit and say I started a new job and now I'm like at work during the time that we would normally record or like I would normally edit. Yeah. So it's harder for me to like put everything together. But Alexis has been very patient with me and I appreciate that more than she'll ever know. But
yeah, it's just been like a slow week where I've hit like rock bottom with motivation and have not wanted to do anything and except for shopping. And so my bank account has definitely taken a hit this past week and, you know, but I got my first COVID shot on Saturday at the country fair, which is the most random place to get it. And so... yeah, that's the most exciting thing that's happened.
I have questions. Hold on. What? You went to the county fair and you got your COVID vaccine? That doesn't seem sanitary.
Well, they had like a station there and it was like one of those portable stations. So you would get it like inside the little like office thing. And so, I don't know. I got the official like COVID vaccine card and everything, and I have to go back, you know, in May for the second round.
That is the most Florida thing I have ever heard anyone ever say. I got my vaccine at the county fair. What?
Yeah. Yeah, it was so funny too. And it's like, you didn't need an appointment. You didn't need pretty much anything. I still have my Idaho license, so I had to show like two forms of residency. But other than that, I just walked up and was like, "Hey, I need my vaccine." And they're like, "Okay, just fill this out." And yeah, I was done within like half an hour, I think.
So how do you feel?
I feel fine. That day I kind of took a hit, like my arm was super sore, but I had like, I was literally going back to back. So we went to the county fair all day, and then we went to Home Depot, and then we went, I had to like book it straight to work. And so I was at work for 3 hours just after getting my shot, and then came home and was kind of dehydrated, and just like everything hit me where my arm hurt really bad, and like I just had super low energy but didn't want to eat or anything, so I like chilled out for a couple hours and then was decent, but like not crazy sore the next day. And I think that's because I was working my arm
and getting but, your arm moving. Yeah,
yeah. And so I think that was the biggest thing, was that I, because I'm like a little tender, but not like, you know.
Yeah, not like enough that it's painful and like you can't move your arm.
Yeah, I'm just not looking forward to the second one that really hits you.
I was going to say, I've heard the second one is significantly worse than the first. Yeah. Like they suggest you take time off work.
Yeah, Ryan didn't have any problems with it.
I think it's different for everybody, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's the same way when you get, like, your childhood vaccinations. Every kid is different. Nobody reacts to vaccinations the same.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go ahead and do a quick ad, and then we will get into today's episode. Well, do you want to go ahead and give us a disclaimer for today's episode?
Yeah, absolutely. So today's episode talks about child abduction and might be upsetting to some listeners. So please proceed with caution.
We have all heard the Madeline McCann story, but today I am going to tell you about America's very own version. On October 4th, 2011, Jeremy Irwin of Kansas City, Missouri, came home at around 2:30 p.m. to his girlfriend Deborah Bradley and their three kids. He spent time with his family while waiting to go back to work as an electrician. At around 4:30, Deborah and her brother Philip decided to run to the store. They got a box of wine and a few other little things. And during this time, Jeremy stayed at home with the kids before he had to go back to work at 5 p.m. Deborah's brother Philip left shortly after they got back. And then the couple's neighbor, Samantha Brando, came over to let her kids play with Deborah's boys. Well, they chatted, had a few drinks, smoked some cigarettes, just kind of had a good quiet night. At around 6:40, Deborah put her 10-month-old daughter, Lisa, to bed. Well, Samantha ran back to the store to get herself some alcohol. Samantha came back shortly after Deborah laid Lisa down. They spent the rest of the night talking on the front porch. They had some drinks, smoked some cigarettes, and their kids played. By 10:30, Deborah had drank more than her fair share of wine. And according to most sources, she had about 5 to 10 glasses of wine, which is or is not a lot of wine. I know that sounds a little funny, but it sort of depends on how big the glasses were. I feel like the amount should have been measured maybe by bottles and not glasses, because nobody fills a glass of wine the exact same every single time. But what we do know is that she was drunk. She did admit that. It was about this time at 10 p.m. that Deborah decided to go to bed with the two older kids, and Samantha left. Going through the house, Deborah checked that everything was in order and assured that her youngest Lisa's bedroom door was closed. On this exact night, Jeremy was at work later than normal. He wrapped up work at about 3:45 a.m. and arrived home at about 4 a.m. Immediately, he noticed that things were off. The front door was unlocked and lights were left on. There was a window open in their computer room, and for whatever reason, he couldn't get it closed. From what I can tell, the window was broken. Besides that, everything seemed fine. The older of the two boys had made his way into his own room, and the younger one was still in bed with Deborah. He did notice that Lisa's bedroom door was opened, but assumed that Deborah had left it cracked so she could hear the baby if she needed her.
I don't know about you, but already my murder, you know, senses are going off, and if I walked into something like that, I would be in instant panic, like looking through everything, be super cautious. And I feel like he's just kind of like nonchalant about it, like, oh, this is open, let me close it. And I would be like, why is that window open? You know, like, I don't know. That's just me, though.
See, I'm the total opposite. Our lights and stuff get left on all the time because Duncan will, like, go to his friend's house and help him with something and not get home until late. So I leave lights on for him all the time. I mean, like, I think that everybody's kind of different. It depends on, like, the vibe. Now, I have heard differing stories about when they discovered that baby Lisa was gone. I have heard that it was the next morning, and I have heard that it was then when he arrived home. The 10-month-old was missing along with 3 cell phones that were in the home. At this point, the search for Lisa is on. An Amber Alert was issued and searchers combed the nearby fields, drained wells, and even the neighbors' homes. After hours of searching and hours of interrogating Lisa's parents, the police were left with 0 leads. And that caused them to cancel the Amber Alert. In an article by ABC News, they talked about how Amber Alerts are really most effective during the first 12 to 24 hours of a child's disappearance, because it is in that time that people are the most vigilant and there is a better chance of the child or suspect being spotted. After this, it is reported that Lisa's parents were no longer cooperating with police for whatever reason, and that they had obtained a lawyer. And then a landfill was searched for the second time. I say the second time because I guess on October 4th, there was a dumpster that was set on fire near Lisa's home at around 2 a.m. And this caused the police to search the landfill for any sign of Lisa. Later in the month of October, Jeremy and Deborah appear on the Today Show. And this is when Deborah flat out admits that she had been drinking and that she was drunk, which we already know. And that she did, in fact, participate in a polygraph and that she did fail that polygraph. One of the questions she said that she failed was when they asked if she knew where Lisa was. But polygraphs are, like, iffy.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, it's been proven over and over again that they don't really work. And so, I don't know. It's hard to be like, well, why are they still using it? Because in some cases, that's what the case is made on.
Yeah, I mean, polygraphs are very iffy. If you're a Crime Junkie fan, one of their life rules is to never agree to a polygraph because they will judge you based on your results. And if they don't like the results, they'll judge you even harder. They being the police or the investigators. So, I mean, polygraphs are an iffy situation, and I think any distraught mother would probably fail a polygraph. I don't know, but that's just me.
Yeah, it's just hard because it's like, if you have nothing to hide, you want to do everything in your power to help out the police. And then yes, also by denying a polygraph, you can look suspicious. And so it's hard because there's not a win-win there.
Yes. Do you know who John Walsh is? Like America's Most Wanted? That show?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not
well,
off the top of my head. I might know, like,
he used to be the host of America's Most Wanted. And he, his son was actually kidnapped. I want to cover his story, but his son was kidnapped. And he talked about Lisa's disappearance on the Today Show. And he said that the first thing he did when his son went missing was agree to a polygraph to, like, help rule himself out. And in this case, that didn't happen. She wasn't ruled out. It was more of a, well, now you look suspicious because you failed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, polygraphs are, like, an iffy situation. And I'm going to go ahead and follow the Crime Junkie rule and never admit to one. I'm never going to take a polygraph. They did follow one of Crime Junkie's life rules, and that is to get a lawyer. So they did go ahead and get a lawyer. I already mentioned that, but anyways, moving on. When I was watching this interview on the Today Show, I also discovered that her timeline had changed. I told you before that Deborah laid the baby down at 6:40. I guess her original story was that she checked on the baby for the final time at about 10:30 p.m., but that wasn't true. She had just put her to bed at 6:40 and, like, went on with her life. Because of this inconsistency, she was, of course, looked at even more so as a suspect. I mean, why lie about when the last time you saw your missing child was? I get it. You don't want to, like, look like a bad mom, but guess what? I will be the first to admit that I do not check on my child every single night after she goes to bed. judge me. I don't care. Sometimes I get caught up doing something and next thing I know it's 12 a.m. and I'm already asleep. Like, I'm not, you don't always check on your kid. And on the Today Show, she admitted to being afraid that they would arrest her and then stop looking for Lisa. That didn't happen though. She was never arrested. One thing I did think was weird is that they never gave Jeremy a polygraph, but I think it was because he was like accounted for in the time that she went missing in, if that makes sense. Like, he was at work. They did grill her and interview her excessively, and they interviewed the boys who were sleeping with her to see if they heard or knew anything about what might have happened. She says in the interview on the Today Show that they did hear something, but they like didn't acknowledge it. And kids can sleep through anything. I mean, so it's not that crazy to think that they slept through their little sister being taken.
I heard, I was listening to another podcast, side note, and talking about it's so hard for like, if you have an alibi of like, I was asleep in bed, there's no one to corroborate your story. And so it's like, if you are suspected, and it's like, well, I was at home by myself asleep. It's kind of like, oh, it's always like a fear. Like, what if that's what I was actually doing and there's no one to back me up?
Yeah, I mean, sleeping is like, unfortunately, not a great alibi. But kids are not reliable. My 2-year-old literally slept through construction in my home. So like, it's not crazy to say that the kids slept through the abduction. I think it's crazy that the interviewers were so persistent about interviewing these kids because they were allowed to interview them once. And then they set up a second interview that was canceled. And then they were denied access to these boys because it was like, why are you putting them through this? They don't know anything. They're children. Deborah told the Today Show that the boys did hear something. But the police found it really hard to believe that she did not hear anything sketchy when someone broke into her home. But if she was drunk, which she admitted to drinking too much, it is completely possible that she was passed out and had no idea. It's completely possible. I just want to point one thing out. It is okay for moms to drink. And the only reason I'm saying this is because everything I read and every interview I watched doing research for this episode talked about how horrible of a person she was for drinking and going to bed. Moms need a break too. Do I think that she could have been more responsible? Sure. Have I ever been irresponsible? Absolutely. And the way that the women on the Today Show were talking about her getting drunk just made me crazy. And I had to throw this out there. No, it wasn't responsible for her to get drunk while she was the only one home. But to her, her children were safe. Everything was fine. It's not her fault that someone came in and took her kid because she was like, well, she was drunk. And this is not me saying that without a doubt she wasn't involved. But just because she was drunk doesn't mean that she hurt her child or did something to her child. I do very much think that it's possible that something happened by accident and then she panicked and like tried to cover it up. But evidence doesn't really show that. So, I mean, I don't know. That's my rant about moms being allowed to get drunk. It's over now. I'm moving on. On October 19th and 20th, just 2 weeks after little Lisa went missing, police executed a search warrant at the girl's home. They were looking for any DNA evidence and left with a few brown paper bags containing unknown items. In this search, they also used cadaver dogs, basically dogs that can smell and identify decaying human remains. And according to multiple news outlets, the dogs alerted at one spot in the parents' bedroom, just below their bed. Like the foot of their bed. This seemed pretty damning to me until they learned that things like human feces can give off the same scent as decaying human. And it is very possible that if like a soiled diaper had been left there for long enough, the scent could be transformed onto the carpet. Also, children are horrible and will poop anywhere. So, I mean,
you have had bad experience of...
Yes, I was just going to say... Yeah, I was going to say a cadaver dog would definitely hit in my child's bedroom because she's pooped in there all over the place. So like, I mean, it's usable in court. It's evidence, but it's not good evidence, I guess you could say. But come October 21st, there was a break in the case. A man and two other witnesses finally come forward saying that Lisa had allegedly been seen with a man. ABC News then releases footage of this mystery man. But dude, this is nothing to be excited about. This video will be on our blog for our listeners, but I am going to play it for you, Alexis, because, I mean, I just think that this is the dumbest surveillance
video. Is the man in this shot connected in some way to the disappearance of baby Lisa Irwin? ABC News has learned that police are investigating one possible scenario that seems to support Lisa's parents' claim that their daughter was abducted. ABC's Rob Nelson is on the story. Rob, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay, it's just a blurry blob.
Yeah, it looks like something. I mean, if you've ever watched like Ghost Hunters, it's like, oh, look at that. And you're like, oh, yeah, look at that. And it's like, that's kind of the same feeling I'm getting. It's like, yeah, there's a person walking. But one, how did they know that that's the person that broke in? Like, I don't know what evidence they might have leading to that.
Right?
And two, it's kind of worse than like having a blurry picture because it's so far like away from the camera, and then there's some other, like, it's just a white blob is all I can see. Like, no defining figures, like
nothing.
Honestly, I'm sure you couldn't even tell if it was a man or woman.
Right? Well, and the only thing that like ties it to Lisa's case is that it was nearby, and I guess, I don't know if it's the same, I don't know if it's the same person in this video or not, but I guess that there was a man seen carrying a baby three homes down from Lisa's at about 12:15 a.m. Then the garbage fire is set, and then the surveillance video is taken at about 12:15 a.m. And then a third sighting is seen miles away at 4:10 a.m. of the same man carrying a baby who doesn't have any clothes on. But I personally think that this video being the suspect is like a stretch. Unless there's something that the police know that we don't know, that's a stretch. And here is the other weird thing. This case, like, it took me down a rabbit hole that I could probably continue to go down. Do you remember that earlier I mentioned that there were also three cell phones missing from the home?
Yeah, I do.
Well, it turns out that on the night Lisa went missing, one of the phones made an outgoing call to a woman that Lisa's parents didn't even know. Megan Wright lived a mile away from the family, but they were complete strangers. The phone call only lasted about 50 seconds, and Wright says that she has no idea who called because the phone was in the possession of someone named Dane. The phone call came in between 8 p.m. and 8:30 p.m., which was about 2 hours after Deborah says that she last saw Lisa. And based on certain news reports, I believe that Dane has been ruled out. I believe that he was cleared because he was able to prove the only reason he had Wright's phone was to set up like a new one or talk to someone else. And the other thing about this phone is that she shared it with everyone else in her home, which was about 7 other people. So anyone could have answered that phone. Anyone, I mean, whoever was on the other end of it could have been calling for anyone in her family.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of hard to tell when it's a family phone.
The weirdest thing is that whoever was making the phone call, obviously, I mean, like there's something connected there, unless the phone, like, here's the interesting thing about Wright. She dated a handyman named Jersey Tanko, and supposedly he was bald. This made him a suspect because the eyewitnesses who had seen a man with a baby the night Lisa was taken said that that man was bald. According to IB Times, he had a tendency to go door to door looking for work. He also lived very close to Lisa's home. And in a news clip I found on YouTube, his former landlord, or his girlfriend's former landlord, who he used to stay at her house sometimes, I guess, talks about how he found out Jersey was on parole for committing theft and breaking into people's homes. On November 18th, the parent's attorney reports that the mother of a teenage girl told him the girl's boyfriend said he heard the handyman bragging about how he was paid $300 to steal baby Lisa. How reliable that is, I don't know. It is completely hearsay. and it proves absolutely nothing. So I have no idea why their lawyer came out and said that, but whatever. Over the years, hundreds and hundreds of tips came pouring in. At one point, they actually thought that they found Lisa in Europe, but DNA quickly ruled that out. 8 months after her disappearance, it is revealed that the couple's debit card had been stolen and that there was a fraudulent charge on it that they were hoping could lead to Lisa. The charge happened a month after Lisa went missing, and the card was charged $69.04 on a British website for baby name changing. And this is according to Lisa's parents on the Today Show. I don't know how easy it is to change a child's name in Britain, but okay. Apparently all you need is a website and a credit card. And from what I can tell, this didn't lead to any real results. Deborah and Jeremy are adamant that they are not involved in any way, shape, or form. And as of December 2020, they are still actively looking for Lisa. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has put out a few different age-progressed images of Lisa in hopes that someone has seen her in the years that she has been missing. We will share those images over on our Instagram and Twitter so that you can share them and bring more attention to this now almost 10-year-old case. Her family has not given up looking for her, and Deborah has said many times that she believes Lisa is still alive, and it is just a matter of time before someone sees something and says something.
Lisa Irwin was 10 months old when she went missing from Kansas City, Missouri on October 4th, 2011. She was last known to be wearing purple pants and a purple shirt with kittens on it, but they have been removed because the child was seen with a man in the early hours of October 4th and was carrying a baby who was only dressed in a diaper. Lisa has blonde hair, blue eyes, and a birthmark on her right thigh. When she went missing, she was about 2 feet and 6 inches tall and weighed about 30 pounds. As of today, she would be around 10 years old. There is currently a $100,000 reward for anyone who can help lead authorities to Lisa Irwin.
Her case, to me, is strangely similar to Madeline McCann. Madeline, I don't know if you are familiar with her story, Alexis, but she went missing from Portugal. While her parents had dinner just yards away, someone came in and took her and vanished into the night. There was a suspect that was seen carrying a toddler, but nobody has ever been able to find that person. Last I heard that they had someone in custody who is suspected of the crime in Germany, but I don't know. I haven't heard any updates on that since that was released. But her case is really similar to Madeline McCann's, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, I binged because Netflix released the Madeline McCann series.
Mm-hmm.
And so I binged that in 2019. And so, but I didn't hear the update about being in custody.
I will send it to you. It was a Crime Junkies episode that they did an update on it. I haven't heard anything since though. So, I mean, I don't know if the guy did it or not. To me, it seems far-fetched because of all the other evidence, but this episode isn't about Madeline McCann. And I don't ever plan on covering her because she is so publicized, not so publicized. Obviously, I think her story matters, but she has a Netflix documentary. So like, I mean,
yeah, I feel like a lot of people have covered it, and we want to focus on cases that people may not have heard.
Yeah, ones that have maybe were in the limelight for a little while and then like left the limelight. Because Lisa, I mean, she has the nickname Baby Lisa, and she was known nationwide for a really long time, but she kind of dwindled. So, I mean, like you said, I would rather focus on cases that are lesser known.
Just basically, if you've seen something, make sure to say something, or if you've heard anything, because I mean, Kansas City's a big town, but maybe the little like block area is a small town, and so maybe somebody's heard something.
It could be as small as one person coming forward. And I've said this before, if you have information and you don't want to share it with the police, you are more than welcome to send it to us and we will share it with them. You can also do it without them knowing who you are. I mean, it's wildly important to share any information you have about any missing child's case. So don't hold back because you dislike police or think you'll get in trouble, because chances are you won't. You'll help someone. So that's my two cents about it.
All right. Should we quickly do highlighted kid of the week?
Yes. Okay, who is our highlighted kid?
All right. So our child this week, her name is, I don't know if it's Ariana or Ariana. I guess it depends on where you're from and how you pronounce it. She was reported missing from San Francisco, California on April 5th, 2016. So not even October. She was last seen in Oakland, California in February, but on April 8th of 2016, her mother, Nicole Fitz, was found murdered and buried in a public park in San Francisco. It is believed that Ariana is not with her mother when she was killed. And that's all the information.
What? Well, we will definitely be posting her. And I might have to do some more Googling because now I'm curious.
Yeah, she just showed up on the FBI website. So unless I missed her before, but.
And tell me again, when did she go missing? April what?
April 5th of 2016. So literally about like 5 years ago-ish, because today's April 12th. So she was born September 6th of 2013. She was born in California. She has black hair, brown eyes, and at the time of the disappearance, she was around 2 feet tall. And she weighed about 45 pounds. And she's black.
Well, hopefully one of our listeners or one of our followers will recognize this little girl and have some information on where she might be.
Yeah, if you have any information, you can contact your local FBI office or the nearest American embassy. And the current field office is in San Francisco that's doing this case.
And always, you can contact the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Their website is linked on our blog.
Remember to follow us over on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Missing Ones Pod. You can also join us over on Facebook in our new discussion group. Just search the Missing Ones discussion group and hit join. We want it to be a space for people to come and talk about the podcast, missing kids, other cases that draw their attention, or, you know, any suggestions that you guys have as well. And most importantly, share with your friends.
Have a great week.
Bye.